Maize and Colchester Parent Support Group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the Maize website, themaizegroup.co.uk.
This is a great episode from Sal where we talk about neurodiversity. It's a real insight into loads of different areas such as dyslexia, autism, ADHD, the importance of understanding a diagnosis yourself, getting the right support that's right for you. We also discuss mental health alongside our differences too. Sal, could you just start by talking a bit about dyslexia and how you think it might be seen by other people?
I think as soon as you've met another person that has dyslexia, you hear all of this like richness of experience that often like very creative, often can see patterns and things that other people don't recognize. But also it's an opportunity to kind of talk about frustrations and like, yes, I would love to know the difference between G and Jay, but I still to this day in my 34th year of life cannot. But then I sometimes think people that haven't had contact with someone that has experienced dyslexia, it can be like, oh, doesn't that mean you just can't read that well? Or, is it confusing for you to read books? And sometimes it becomes really patronizing rather than sort of letting people talk about their lived experiences. Dyslexia is something that's throughout my family. And yes, it can cause like issues around reading and comprehension and sequencing, but also, doesn't everyone have weird things when it comes to kind of, I don't think anyone really sits down with a huge weighty book and isn't going to sort of have issues with that. But having more understanding has really helped me, like, you know, in terms of using a slightly different background colour, maybe even like using more audiobooks if I'm listening for pleasure, you know. But I think unfortunately one of the things can be the impact of dyslexia can be quite minimized. Oh, dyslexia, like kids in school have. And it's like, no, dyslexia, this thing that we need to spend more time understanding. Does that make sense?
It makes really good sense. And what I love, Sal, is that you first of all spoke about the abilities that actually can work with the way that people might think differently and some of the skills that might lead to, and also the importance around not making assumptions. Because I don't know about you, Sal, but I find that people seem to do that about lots of differences. They just make assumptions like, oh, autism, so it must mean that you do this or you act like that. Would you say that you find that too?
Oh, absolutely. Like, everyone's okay with me having like being excessively chatty or being a really open book. But all of a sudden, when I've had, when I've been under like high levels of stress and I've experienced psychosis, so auditory and visual hallucinations, all of a sudden people are like, oh, you're a Bond villain, are you? Like, that's one of the scary ones, one of the ones we don't talk about. So yeah, I think these huge assumptions, or even as someone that's now going through the process of being diagnosed, and which can take a really long time, a lot of people chipping in, I don't think you've got ADHD, Sal, I don't think that's you. Nah. And I'm like, great, but like, how would you know? What training or specialism have you got in diagnosing that? So yeah, I think these sort of like assumptions can creep in really easily, and I don't think those assumptions ever really help anyone.
They're really good points there, again, especially about, you know, like diagnosing. I mean, I myself have worked in a school for a special needs school as well for just under 13 years, I think it is now, and I would never diagnose somebody because that's, you know, that's not my job. That's not my role. And actually, you know, like you said, it's about what training have people had to actually even do that. So you mentioned something else there, Sal, about, you know, the impact that some of these differences can have on people's mental health.
Again, everything that I'm responding about is through like the lens of my own lived experiences. And something that I didn't learn until a few years ago is like, with neurodiversity, you have traits. And then with mental health, you have symptoms. So I might have traits linked to my suspected ADHD, my autism, that I get overwhelmed, that I just need some quiet. But then sometimes I guess people's prejudices or assumptions or, well, the deadline's today, so you'll have to get it done today. Because my brain is kind of being forced to work in a neurotypical way, all of a sudden that can compound my feelings of anxiety, of loneliness, of inadequacy. So sometimes it's no surprise to me that if you are neurodiverse, you may have also experienced low periods of mood or melancholy. Because it is like it's very stifling. I'm 34 now and I'm going through a diagnostic process for ADHD and autism and potentially another to help explain the sort of periods of psychosis I've had. And that has been a drawn out, long experience. So at moments where I feel like quite sad and frustrated, I need to remember that that's because the process is quite inaccessible. That doesn't mean that having ADHD or autism equates to being sad. Like, that's a misconception right there. But I can understand a lot of people, if you're in a school and you're being told off for being naughty or for fidgeting or being loud, and then you're like, I'm just being me. Why am I getting told off more? Why am I getting told to go for a disciplinary more or go see the head teacher? When I was at school, I was lucky enough that I was deemed very bright. So people would tolerate my messing about, which was lucky, because if they didn't, I'm sure I would have been even worse behaved. But yeah, imagine if just by interrupting conversations, you're being treated as if you're naughty, rather than actually your brain is so excited and quick and you're on to the next part of the conversation. So yeah, I think I have experienced a lot of anxiety and sadness linked to sort of neurodiversity. And that's why when I heard about this initiative and others where they can kind of bring people together and maybe share these experiences with younger adults, that you shouldn't feel ashamed or embarrassed, you know, you've literally got a superhero. If you've got a turbocharged brain, I always think of Iron Man now and thinking of him as an autistic role model. And I'm sometimes my sadness is I have to go and just have an Iron Man marathon and be no, this is good. This is a good thing. So yeah, that's kind of how I see mental health and neurodiversity overlapping.
Yeah, you give such a good balanced view. And I know from, you know, the young people we work with, they're going to absolutely love listening to this and they'll take so much from it. I mean, that's what I wanted to go on to next as well. You just said about, you know, initiatives like this and others and why they're so important. How would you like to see this type of work grow, and what type of difference would you like it to make in society, do you think, Sal?
I carried a great deal of shame about until I met an autistic friend this year. I'm going to use their name just so that way they get the accolade that they deserve, but yeah, their name is Oakley James, and they were talking to me about autism and their experiences of that, and they were talking very openly about shame. And there were things that I had done as a child that I carried a lot of shame about. I would pull apart insects, bugs, to see what magic made them alive. And I wish someone had just told me that didn't mean I was a wicked or an evil person. Because I think I carried so much guilt about that, you know. And then I went on as an adult to watch the TV show Dexter, and he did stuff like that. And then he ended up being a murderer. And I was just sat there waiting, oh my goodness, am I a villain? Am I a bad guy in the waiting? Something's going to push me over the edge. But then actually through speaking with Oakley and reflecting more, I was I'm a social justice educator. my job, I literally travel the world getting people to think about how to be better and kinder to each other. And I think one of the things with autism for me is that I really struggle with labels. I need people to tell me, like, you know, like, that's a rule, that's not a rule, you're this, you're that. And Oakley was like, you're not an evil person. And I was like, whoa. And it blew my mind. And I think if we could get people having conversations like that in their formative years before they've really laid down this, once someone finds out who I am really, they're going to think I'm awful. So sort of trying to get those conversations, whether, and I love the fact that here it's using students' voices to amplify and be like, look, let me tell you, I found about this. And I think getting that support as far and wide in schools, but I also wonder if there's the reach to also do it in other organizations that affect communities. So that could maybe even be sports clubs or like religious groups, you know, like places where you're told about what's right and what's wrong. And actually, if people are there saying, your brain isn't wrong, your brain is different, and you might want to know about some of the really cool stuff that your brain can do. You know, just building on people's strengths, and rather than it being like splitting people up, it would be amazing if that level of awareness was like, say you were working on a project in school and you knew that someone had ADHD or you knew that someone had autism, that you could be like, right, like, what do you enjoy doing best? You know, and kind of like drawing on people's strengths, because I think there have been times when, because I haven't known to tell people, people just have assumed otherwise. So yeah, I think really having those conversations at a young as age as possible, and whether that's through like resources, giving talks, webinars, getting into schools, I think that's the exactly like the right place to be. And I guess as well, maybe making sure we don't leave anyone behind. Like, is it like BIPOC people who are equally going to be dealing with challenges of neurodiversity and diagnosis, those who have physical disabilities, and perhaps like that gets given more attention than neurodiversity, BIPOC, LGBT plus, older people, because there are so many people with ADHD who are older adults, and then that gets assumed to be dementia, when actually, like, because there's so many parallels with the symptoms. So I think the kind of the impact of this project is just so vast, but I think working grassroots in the schools is absolutely the best place to be. Yeah.
Brilliant. And I can't wait for you to talk to some of our other ambassadors, which I hope will happen one day now that we've got this connection, because, yeah, they share so many of your views, Sal, and it will just be great for you to speak to some of them. So you spoke about getting a diagnosis a little bit ago. You know, how important is it that people do get the right diagnosis, do you think?
So I think this is definitely a complicated and personal one. For me, I find having labels really helpful. There's security in that for me, you know. But I also think that a lot of people know that they are on the autism spectrum, or know they have traits of ADHD. And I guess it's about asking ourselves the question, would a diagnosis help me? You know, because for me, I feel the medication that I'm on right now isn't quite right. So for me, I hope working through getting a diagnosis will enable me to get that balance right, get the holistic support right. But for others, if you know you are more introverted and you need some time on your own, and maybe you like to hyper focus on particular activities, but actually like it doesn't impact your life to the extent that you feel that you're struggling or you're missing out, you might decide in your head, yeah, I think maybe I do have autism, but I don't, like, it's not a big deal for me. So I think it's always about like being personal. And I also wonder sometimes with parents, you know, I think a lot of parents really worry about not doing the best that they can for their children, you know. Perhaps, if we'd looked into this then, it wouldn't have been a problem when you were at university. And I think that there's probably some of that within my own family. But there is power, because once you have a sense of, oh, so like, it's like, it's not that I was sad, it was I was bored. Oh, or, oh, I don't jump in to be rude, I'm just too excited. Oh, you know, these little aha moments that are like, actually, I'm pretty freaking cool. And then when I was like, again, like my friend Oakley, who got their diagnosis before me, they were like, oh yeah, see, you know, you like Iron Man, yep, autism, you know, you like Rick and Morty, autism, Archer, and I was like, all of my role models. And it was really like a validating experience to be like, okay, like, it's not all, because one thing that does worry me is that kind of the Bond villain, that if you're not, if you have neurodiversity, you're wicked, you're evil, you're plotting. That is very far from the experience that I've had. So yeah, I think, yes, being able to kind of have that joy. But again, I know that it's very personal, and I think we have to be intersectional in our thinking here. I felt that I had relative safety as like a non-binary trans white postgraduate educator to be like, yeah, I also believe I'm neurodiverse. I felt in my community, in my world of work, I could come out and say that and it wouldn't be a risk for me. But do I feel that it would be a risk for others? Yeah. Do I feel that some people would just be shut down? Absolutely. So I think it's kind of relying on each person and their family units to think about what is the best route, what's the best time to do it. Does the individual actually want to do it? Will it help them? You know, I'm not here to say you should wait until you're 34, because I actually wish that I had found out much earlier. But I think it does go to show that there's no one route to this, and you can kind of get there, get the support, and start feeling more seen, you know, because just joining, I've joined, well, Kieran, this might be something you relate to, but I've joined about a million different meme groups for ADHD, for autism. And I'm like, yes, my life, like, like. So that's been really joyful as well.
Yeah. Well, I love, you've given it really good perspective, because a lot of the time at the multi-schools, we talk about educating others and building understanding with others. But what you've said there as well is the importance of understanding yourself and validating yourself, which is maybe something that we don't always, you know, recognize as much here. But it, listening to you, Sal, you've made it clear how important it is. So you've covered so many different points and so many different things just in this short space of time. And I'm really looking forward to you being involved with the multi-schools more, obviously, you know, if you can be.
Yeah, it went so quick. Thanks so much for having me, Kieran.
That's okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sal.
The Maze and Colchester Parent Support Group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the Maze website, themazegroup.co.uk.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.